Welcome to Coaster Track, a UK theme park podcast in association with Scaretrack. Please be advised that we have no censor. The language used may be of an explicit nature and is not intended for younger listeners or the easily offended. All views expressed are those of the individual host and do not necessarily reflect those of Coaster Track, Scaretrack, our guests, or any of our associates. So, if you're still here, let's begin the show.
You're listening to Coaster Track, a UK theme park podcast.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Coaster Track podcast. My name is Mikey and this episode is brought to you by the Scaretrack Network. On this episode, we're going to be talking to Ryan, Sam and Brett, the team behind Theme Park Loopy podcast. Really enjoyable podcast. It's been really cool listening to their episodes, most recently about SW9 and the rumours there. Some really cool stuff coming from those guys and really excited to get them onto the Coaster Track episode today. Now, Coaster Track has had a little bit of time off recently. Our last Coaster Track episode was actually back in, I think it was late September for Oktoberfest 2020 at the Orton Towers Resort. Now, Coaster Track will be back this season. We'll be doing some mini vlogs from the parks and we'll be doing more episodes like this because that's what we enjoy. It's all about sharing the love and the passion for the industry and the community, the UK and European and whole world theme park community. We just want to share stories, share interactions, and that's why we've got Theme Park Loopy on today, and I'm going to be on their podcast in the next coming weeks as well. So there's going to be more Coaster Track episodes. Apologies for the last few months have been quiet, but that's obviously because we've been focused on Scaretrack. We did loads of Scaretrack episodes, well, as many as we could over the Halloween period. We've had our highlights over January, highlighting our favourite moments of the last 5 years of Scaretrack. And most recently, we brought you an interview with Andrew Porter talking all about Slasher and the mazes he's designed with Burton Screamfest, also working with Merlin Magic Making as well. And we recently, just a day or so ago, put out an episode reviewing an escape game. So check out the feed, subscribe where you're listening, and let's get on to today's episode.
You're listening to the Coaster Track Podcast.
Hi folks and welcome back to this episode of the Coaster Track Podcast. Like I said in the intro, I am joined by the team of Theme Park Loopy. Guys, welcome to Coaster Track.
Hello.
Hello, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
No, thanks for coming on. To all the listeners, there are three of them joining us now. We're going to have a nice big discussion about theme parks, about screen parks. But before we go any further, guys, introduce yourselves. Let all the listeners know who you are.
Hey, what's up? I'm Sam from Coaster Sam Blog, and you can find everything you need to know on Instagram at Coaster Sam. We even do our very own theme park trivia game show where we go around theme parks and test out people's trivia knowledge and theme park knowledge. It's filmed by enthusiasts, starring enthusiasts, for enthusiasts, filmed inside theme parks. So head on over to at Coaster Sam Blog to check out more.
How'd you beat that? Sam's so upbeat, isn't he?
I know, yeah, that was really good. It was like it was on the turntables at a DJ bar, sort of. Okay, guys, next up, Oblivion, what year was it made? Boop, boop, boop.
Yeah, he has got a script now, I think. I'm sure that he's got a script.
I think so. It is getting I'm getting more and more of the same every time. It's definitely scripted behind the microphone.
I promise you it's not scripted.
So, hi, guys. I'm Brett. You can find my theme park-related stuff through my theme park Instagram page. It's Theme Parks by Brett. I'm making models and doing loads of theme park-related designs.
Brett is a world-class model. Yeah.
Yeah. Which means I build models, but I'm also a model, right?
There we go.
There you go.
Brett, you're our very own world-class model.
But also, me and Mikey are in this conversation, so it's undoubtedly going to end talking about scare attractions at some point.
Absolutely.
In which case, I have my own company called Fear & Sons Immersive Horror Consulting, which you can find on all of the relative things as well.
Winner. And last but not least...
I've not got a jazzy intro either. But I'm Ryan, and... I run the podcast with Sam and Brett, who are our regular hosts. And recently, I have actually made both Sam and Brett actually host an episode. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to make them do that more and more, and then I don't have to do it anymore. So it'd be great.
Sort of fade yourself out.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll do the editing in the background.
There we go.
Fine. But if you want to find Theme Park Loopy, just find us on any podcast provider, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you want to go. Also, we're on Facebook and Instagram, and also you can find us on YouTube as well.
Winner. So guys, make sure you took a note of all that. There's lots of different hashtags and handles there, so I'll put them all in the show notes as well, so everyone can check out Theme Park Loopy and everything as well that Brett and Sam do as well. But guys, let's talk about theme parks. I'm a little bit out of practice, really. You know, it's mid-February 2021. Theme park season wasn't quite what it should have been for 2020. And without getting too political and too talking about COVID and whatnot, I'm going to try and be optimistic and be quite excited about this season. You guys looking forward to getting back to your local parks?
Yeah, although one of my local parks is Lightwater Valley. So I'm not as looking forward to getting back to Lightwater Valley, unfortunately.
True. They've had a fair bit of... I mean, I've always wanted to go. It's really far away from me. I've never had a chance to go. And I thought, oh, this would be the year to go because I won't be going abroad as much as we all hope. But if they're keeping closing rides, keeping rides closed, there's kind of not much point, is there?
Well, I mean, from what I understand, they have had some success with the family market. Although when they say family, I think what they actually mean is younger children,
yeah.
You know, and family. So I understand that when they were open last year, they were busy and they were getting some success. And I think they've just decided to carry on with that. Also, from what I understand, you know, Lightwater Valley, the rides that they have, thrill rides, are starting to get a bit older, getting a bit more expensive to run. You know, even though Eagle's Claw still runs really well, it's obviously going to have a cost attached to it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so it's a real shame. I don't know if I'm going to get out there next year. But, I mean, if they ever open the Ultimate again, then I'll be out there like a flash.
Well, I was going to say, that's the main draw for, you know, enthusiasts like us, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, we were talking about this the other day, but I'll definitely put the idea out on here, because why not? We were saying, what if they did a sort of Ultimate weekender, right? So you could basically say, like, if they were ever gonna, let's hope not, but if they were ever gonna get rid of the Ultimate, that they were did a big kind of finale weekend send-off. Maybe you could get, I don't know, some of the designers and talks happening about the ride and the history of the ride, get some, obviously, some exclusive ride time in there, some night rides, some day rides, you know what I mean? You could really make a whole almost event of it. Definitely. So that we can give it a proper send-off, because it's so unique.
Yeah.
Can you imagine, instead of the usual talk by John Wardley, it would be Jeff from Network Rail.
Saying why it's late.
It is. The ultimate, though, it has to be, for me, it has to be one of the, probably the most unique coaster in Europe. Probably one of the most fun coasters to go on in Europe, I would say. So to say that it's a small park near Ripon, they've got such an amazing coaster. Mm. But it's a coaster of two different rides. Like, the first part of it, it's weird how they've built it, but the first part of it is just basically a transport ride. I mean, you go up quite a high drop, but the problem is, because the train is so long, if you're sat at the front of the Ultimate, you're only dropping about 10 feet.
You're already halfway down before it starts making any movement.
Yeah, exactly. And then it just kind of peters out over some bunny hops. And then when it goes up the final lift hill, that final lift hill takes about 5 minutes or something to get around. But then when it drops you into the woodland, then all hell breaks loose. It's, you know, all bets are off. One of the most unbelievable experiences you could ever have on a roller coaster.
Definitely. It's something that it's a bucket list ride, I think, for a lot of people as well, to be fair. Anyone that hasn't had a chance to get over there. Sam, Brett, have you both been on the Ultimate?
We We both haven't yet.
See, all three of us need to get on it.
No. Well, this is what I mean. Let's get a whole bunch of us all together and have a weekend session of it. Why not? I mean, it'd be great. Even if the coaster wasn't going away, just like a celebratory event of like, let's celebrate what an awesome, unique roller coaster experience that we have here. Because you know, like you mentioned, Ryan, there isn't anything else like it, pretty much anywhere. You know, where do you get a ride where you can get scenic views? You can get like transport
garlic
experiences. That's it. You know, get the amazing rolling hills of Yorkshire in there, and then also get some sort of crazy forest coaster, Big Thunder Mountain vibe,
along with some whiplash and back pain.
We love it. We love whiplash and back pain. Bring it on.
That's just part of the fun. And if Lightwater Valley are not prepared to have a weekender, they can just send Sam a DM and chill. It'll be fine.
DM and chill. Have you heard that's another one of his lines, Mikey?
This is
to go DM and DM and chill with him on Instagram.
Right, yeah. This was a very bad mistake that I made one time on a podcast. I said, yeah, you know, you can find me on Instagram, so come on, you know, hit me up on the DMs and we can chill. And that was the worst mistake I'd ever said in my life, because it sounded so...
And now they're never going to let you live that down. It's now on our podcast as well.
Between Brett being a world-class model, me DMing and chilling, Ryan, we need to find something. I mean, have you got anything you can bring to the table in terms of world-class embarrassment? I mean, there's got to be something, right?
I don't think so. No, I don't think.
I'm pretty sure your really bad impressions speak for themselves generally.
There we go.
The world's worst impressionist. Yeah.
I don't think we can go any further about theme parks without hearing a really bad impression now.
Why don't we go, hey, I'm John Wardley, and I'm going to build a ride called Nemesis. That's my impression of John Wardley. It's a good one.
I've not heard that one before. I'm glad of it.
Just true.
It was uncanny.
Truly.
Like, was John, are you here? Is that you?
I feel like I'm going to... I needed to plan more for this episode.
Have you got any really embarrassing like stuff that you've said, Mikey, on any of your podcasts?
Yeah, loads, way too many. And the problem is with me is that for some reason at one point I think it's a really good idea to say, and then maybe a good month or two later I realize that wasn't a good thing to say. So silly little things, like I'll do it multiple times on this podcast, I'll say the wrong word, but screw it, it's just in conversation, no one really notices that I had bad grammar or whatnot. But when Nick Hudson asks you to do a promo video for Theme Park Fan, and I think it was in the height of the first lockdown, either way, I was drinking far too much because there's nothing else to do. And I thought it'd be a good idea to go, I've got a Woody for Wicker Man, but I've got a full-on boner for this musical. Now, that's not a good thing to say ever. But for some reason, and it took multiple takes, like I wasn't happy with the way I said boner for this musical, I did it multiple times until I was happy with my sentence of, I had a Woody for Wicker Man, but I got a full-on boner for this musical. And I sent it to him, so it was released when everyone else released, you know?
I did see that.
Yeah, why would I say that? Why? Like,
To be fair, I didn't even blink. I thought, well, that's such a Mikey thing to say.
I've got some sort of reputation to live up to.
Some may say that you've got a Woody for perfection.
Well, there you go. That's it. That's why I did it multiple times. I've got a Woody.
Congratulations, by the way, on your cameo in Theme Park Fan. We all listened. It was brilliant.
Oh, fantastic.
Well, thanks. Again, a line that took me a million times to say. I think it was two lines I had all together. And I can't sing, but I could not wait to be inside it. It was my first line. Bit raunchy, yeah. But thanks, yeah. It was quite a cool theme park.
I'm sensing a theme with your connection to theme park fans.
If Nick Hudson is listening, then you know there's a few of us here available to do a line or two in the future. You never know.
Oh, careful! This is going down a very different route now. Talking about crikey.
How was that for you? Did you get to hear the full musical before it was put out live, Mikey?
No. I had a few snippets from Nick quite early on, but very, very early snippets. And then, obviously, the song that I was in, I managed to hear near enough the final version of that so I could input my bits in. But other than that, no, I heard it on the night with everyone else. And I think it was just something for, you know, we couldn't all be at Blackpool, or the ones that would be couldn't be. And, yeah, it was a nice little way to kind of start a weird 2021
season.
Yeah,
I absolutely loved it.
I thought it was absolutely fantastic. To be honest, I didn't really know what to expect because, you know, how can you do a musical in the middle of a lockdown? But the fact that it involves so many different, you know, contributors and networks from around the enthusiast community, and it was just so punny and so funny, and I just thought it was fantastic. And yeah, hats off to everyone involved. You know, I just thought it was so good. And I actually kind of secretly hope they release. I don't know if they have. But they released the soundtrack on like Spotify or something.
They have.
Oh, have they?
They did the other day. Yeah,
about 3 days afterwards, I think Nick Hudson managed to get it out on all of the Spotify, Amazon Music. I saw it on earlier.
Oh my gosh! Oh, there we go.
Yeah, Apple Music.
I'm only about a quarter of the way into that rap. I'm still trying to get. It's a tough one.
It's a good rap.
When he listed off all the rides in that really quick section, I let out an audible "Oh damn!"
Me too. He's very talented, is Archie, and everyone who was involved. You know, everyone. Obviously, some people had a lot more input than others. I literally just did one or two lines, but some very talented people in the industry. So it was cool to celebrate that, and everyone was just happy and cheerful, which doesn't happen that often in this community. So it's quite nice.
Yeah, I mean, we purposely try and, you know, be as positive as possible, you know, in our episodes, because I think it is too easy to get drawn into the negativity sometimes, you know, because we're watching the news all the time, you know, and you can get a bit negative. But the way I see it is people listen to podcasts and watch videos as escapism, don't they? And I think
definitely,
I think we've got a bit of a duty to, you know, keep things positive. And I know there's not a lot to talk about at the moment, but there is quite a bit to talk about in a way. You know, we've got Croc Drop that's got announced today. Well, not announced, but we see some more pictures today. We've got a Velocicoaster hopefully opening at some point over in Orlando. That looks completely amazing.
Definitely.
So there's a lot of good news. It does. So a lot of good news in the industry at the moment. And we can only hope that the parks are going to reopen you know, latest June, I think. So, you know, not got too long to wait. So
I was so excited when they released those visuals for Croc Drop today, and the audio as well. I absolutely love like a fresh soundtrack on like ride audio. I think it's wonderful. And Croc Drop, in that little snippet that they released today, Chessington did and Merlin, it sounds and looks fantastic. And from working at the resort in the winter for the Christmas event, you know, you could visibly see every day, you know, those jaws getting bigger and bigger. And so now to finally have it be out there, it just looks amazing.
Definitely. Now, I don't get to go to Chessington as often as I'd like. I'm a good, you know, 3 or 4 hours away from there. And if you are traveling that far, you're tending to go into Thorpe Park, aren't you, really, for the day, unless you extend into a weekend and whatnot. But Croc Drop, although it's just a standard sort of drop tower, you know, looking at pictures of it, like you say, the audio and the visuals released today, it looks like they've really put a lot of effort into this, what is basically just a little a family drop tower.
Yeah, I don't know if I heard this rumour, if I'm completely making this up right now, that there may be some form of kind of themed interactivity beforehand, before you say go up, so I don't know if there's some form of kind of dark ride kind of section to it, potentially in the jaws. I don't know if I'm 100% making that up or not.
You heard that rumor from Sam.
So Sam, did you make it up is what I'm asking.
Hang on, I'm not making up any rumors. All I said was is that I'm pretty sure there's going to be some sort of special effects involved in the coaster. Not in the coaster, in the drop tower, sorry. So, and I don't know that for sure. That's just me purely speculating. But I'm sure that there would be, because if you look at the likes of Magma at Poulton's Park, and I'm trying to think of the other kind of family drop towers that we've got around the country. I guess well, the one at Drayton Manor isn't really a family drop tower, but it's a drop tower nevertheless.
Volcano.
That's it.
Volcano at Fantasy Island as well.
Fantasy, yeah.
Okay, and they all kind of have gentle, like, special effects and sort of lighting effects that happen before you go up. And so I could imagine, and I would expect, that Croc Drop would also have the same, which is amazing. I definitely don't know if there's going to be any interactivity with dark ride sections. That would be amazing. Can you imagine if you could somehow, I mean, again, this is completely me thinking this up right now, but could you imagine if there'll be a way that you could vote on your seat whether you want to bat, like, shoot up, or whether you want to climb slowly and then drop, and you have to, like, versus... Okay. Can you imagine if you, yeah, like, could verse everyone on the ride vehicle, and you press up or down, and it's whatever vote kind of wins out of the majority, whether you fly up or drop down. How cool would that be? That'd be amazing.
That is cool. That is definitely cool, yeah. And that's something that, you know, even if it's not on Croc Drop, that's definitely something that they could do on these sort of rides, for sure. I know there's a few rides that are interactive. Even Arthur, Europa Park, they have little buttons on there, and everyone presses it at the right time. It sort of vibrates your seat and whatnot. But yeah, that's pretty cool. I know that there's got to be... I don't know if it's a dark ride section, but there's definitely some sort of... I think there's some sort of scene or visuals or something within, like, the dark section in the actual Croc Drop. You know, they've had Andrew Porter, Merlin Magic Making. It was his last project, and I spoke to him last week in another episode. He said that was his last project with Merlin Magic Making, and he's worked on the likes of Room on a Broom and Gruffalo and Oblivion the Black Hole. You know, to think that they've got him and the Merlin Magic Making team on board, you'd like to think that there's more than just crappy Harris fencing within the crocodile's mouth, wouldn't you?
I have no doubt if the likes of Andrew Porter, who is, I mean, if you know of any of his work, you know how brilliant he is. I have no doubt that there will definitely be, in that case, some form of scene within the station building there. But that screams Andrew Porter entirely.
And I think it's great. You know, I think the decision to move and take out Ramesses Revenge, which, you know, let's face it, was perhaps not 100% for the demographic they were going for. And also it was getting old. Let's not forget that either. Mm. So I think it was the right move to make. And I think it's only going to further the park's prowess in the country's offering, you know. And I think Chessington is really high up there in terms of its levels of theming. If you walk around the resort, there is so much theming in the different lands, and you can see a clear difference when you're moving between lands to lands, as opposed to kind of, you know, there being sort of one palm tree in the background, you know, and then suddenly you're in the land of, I don't know, the tropics or something. Do you know what I mean? So but Chessington, you know, you're fully immersed in those zones and those lands. So I think, you know, Croc Drop is going to be a fantastic addition, and is going to be, you know, no exception to that.
I think we also...
Sam went to Flamingoland for the first time this year as well. And how does that compare to Sam?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to bash an independent park against a massive corporate park, but you know, I would agree. You know, Flamingoland, it was funny because it was just like a whole load of wide open space and a bunch of rides on a field, but then you go to certain areas and it's actually really nice, like the Kamali area and the Mumbo Jumbo area. You know,
well that's the thing. If where Kamali is and Voodoo, that's such a really good themed area. I always think of, you know, Chessington or somewhere like that when we're in that area.
And again, Chessington, I need to get down there more, because it has some beautiful theming, doesn't it?
incredible. Yeah, especially if you go over Halloween time as well. They, you know, have so much atmospherical lighting, so it's even, you know, stronger. Especially, you know, they're like, it used to be Transylvania. I always forget what they call it, the Wild Woods now, I think they call that area. But, you know, you've got the kind of the European style sort of buildings and facades and the incredible like African kind of stage there. You know, it really gives a Busch Gardens feel. And I think that's what you almost could compare it to, the UK's Busch Gardens, because I think there's also quite a, coming from a theme park entertainment background that I've been in and I love, I think Chesterton is one of those parks that stands out amongst the crowd as being incredibly strong in its entertainment offering. And I think even them just having that ginormous stage where they can really showcase their talent they've got at the park and their fantastic shows, which, you know, we've all seen use pyro, you know, Christmas time, they use snow, confetti, all the likes of it. It's awesome. And I think they'll only expand that and grow their entertainment offering and the theming, you know, and let's not forget the theming adds another element to that. So, I've got a massive love affair to the park. And interestingly, the wonderful Shelley from Theme Park Loopy, she's not interested in going into Chessington, and I've tried to convince them. So, you know, I think that's going to have to be a trip.
Definitely.
We are going on a South Coast tour, hopefully, at some point later this year. And that'll be one of the places alongside Poulton's as well, I think, and a few other places. But Sam doesn't want to go to the Isle of Wight. To go to like Black Gang China and those kind of crazy places. So I want to get over there as well. But Sam has no interest in Black Gang China. I can't believe it.
Oh, you got to try it out. They had a cool Halloween event. I don't know if it was last year or the year before as well, though. So if you can mix it up with going to Black Gang China with the Halloween, then, you know, you're onto a winner.
They had really good reviews. The Terror Island, I believe it was called, was it?
I think, you know what, considering I do a Scare Trap podcast, I'm not the most familiar with it, but I think it was that, Brett, yeah.
Yeah, Terror Island, I think it was designed and run by Atmosphere, I believe.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
So, Mikey, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I feel like we've been sort of blabbering on, but actually I'd be really interested to know your thoughts.
Of course.
Obviously, this is like the first time we're properly, I guess, meeting, here we are.
Indeed.
But I'm just so interested, you know, as a theme park fan, quite clearly, you know, and an enthusiast, what would you say in your experience, and I'm going to make this really broad here, what would you say is your number one theme park experience or moment that you've ever had in your life? So that can be anything from a coaster to a water ride to a show to a food and beverage outlet, just anything, something like an event or a moment that stands out to you is like, wow, that was incredible and I'll never forget that.
Junkyard.
That's a hard question.
That is a hard question. I'm gonna go with I've got a handful, but if I'm going with one, an old school one was from when I was a kid. And I know we all look at it sort of our childhood with rose-tinted glasses and an element of nostalgia. But I was terrified of rides always. Like my mum, my stepdad and my brother would go on them. I was always terrified until 2001. I went on Nemesis, and what were they building ready for 2002? They were building Air. So instantly I became like, it's like give me crack for the first time. I instantly became addicted to crack, which was SWFlive.com, TowersTimesForums.com. Just seeing this thing get built. So when I went in 2002, so I would have been 13. It was the best day of my life because oh my God, I'm actually here. I've been watching it online getting built, and I love roller coasters now, and this is a brand new coaster. And I think you kind of get a similar feeling to that whenever there's something new. Like, we all get excited when there's a new ride, but then when you get older and you try parks abroad, you know, you're turning your first experience of a ride into a first experience of a whole park. So you got loads of them. So, short answer, Air, when it opened in 2002.
Fantastic.
That didn't go the same way as Sam had hoped, because
when he asked
Ash from Scare Directory, he said Toxic Junkyard, and that was the right answer, by the way.
Don't get me wrong, I was pleasantly surprised by Toxic Junkyard. You know, it was so good. I thought it was a fantastic maze. I thought it was one of the best mazes Towers have made for a while. And considering it wasn't the plan, like they had other plans, it was sort of built because of COVID. It could have been a complete second-hand flop, because loads of stuff in there was, you know, second-hand stuff. There's stuff from The Flume, there's stuff from Carnival of Screams, there's stuff from loads of old mazes and loads of random junk, literally, like a junkyard. But they made something beautiful out of it. I think they did a cracking job.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I thought it was wonderful. It was really, really good. Loved it.
Did you hate it?
He worked all night.
I loved that attraction with my whole heart.
And the best bit apparently was chainsaw number two. That was a pretty amazing chainsaw action.
I'm gonna get that.
Well, before we get onto more scare stuff,
you don't
have
rights to edit.
I'll just leave it all in.
Sam can't ask you to edit all this stuff out. So it's great for us.
Yeah, I'm keeping. I very rarely edit stuff out. The only thing I edit is when I try and do the intro. Like I do the intro after this, I'll do it a million and one times. But all your listeners only hear it once. But the million and one time is the right time. Yeah, I'm always screwing that bit up. But other than that, anything you say is going in the recording, I'm afraid, guys. Sorry about that.
Marvellous. Well, for the record, it was fantastic. And it was an amazing thing to be a part of. And, you know, everyone, the whole cast and crew and creative there, it was just fantastic. So that's all.
They did before a bang-up job, definitely.
Before we move on to scares, though, I want to get, what's your opinion on probably a little bit under the radar now? I think people have completely forgotten this. But Flamingoland are getting a massive 10 inversion coaster, potentially called Inversion. We're not sure yet.
Terrible name.
Are you looking forward to that? Because I'm not a big fan of Colossus, personally. No. I don't mind the way it rides is okay, but it's got the most terrible trains and the most uncomfortable restraints. It's like you have to climb inside and then kind of put your knees against your face or something.
Yes.
And then you kind of get subjected to this kind of, you know, situation. So, you know, lap bars, much more comfortable trains. I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, is it going to have lap bars?
Definitely. Yeah, lap bars.
What? In the UK?
I know, right?
Okay, now I'm excited. All right, I'm on board.
You know what? I like Colossus. I don't like the trains exactly the same as you. I think the coaster, it's a nice tall coaster. It's got 10 inversions. The layout's pretty cool, especially the one at Thorpe. You know, it has uses the terrain quite well. I know the one at Flamingoland probably is more. It's more like a car park coaster, really, more than anything, isn't it?
How dare you? It has a pond.
But it's not. Yeah, it's not going to be quite the same. But you know what? I've only ever been to Flamingoland once, and other than Hero, which is the worst thing I've ridden on this planet, the overall park, I really enjoyed it. I really, really enjoyed the whole zoo, all the rides, and the fact that they're going to get a massive, big 10 looping coaster is great for the park. So, and yeah. Not having to sit in the awful Colossus trains, I'm mega excited about that. And that's probably other than what's happening at Portons Park,
Storm Chaser.
Yeah, other than Storm Chaser, which and that whole area, that's going to be like probably one of the biggest investments for parks opening this year. I'd probably say the Flamingoland coaster is probably second to that, because. Although I'm looking forward to Black Mirror, Croc Drop, David Walliams Land, they all seem to me lower key attractions compared to those, you know, big investments.
Do you know what? On a hot summer's day, there's no better park to be than Flamingoland, I think. Like, because I find if it's hot summer, Pleasure Beach is going to be far too busy. Alton Towers, again, far too busy. Horrendous queues. But if you go to Flamingoland, you can go on a few rides and have a bit of a mosey around, the zoo. If you get too hot, get yourself on one of the splashiest, the most splashiest rides. And you know, it's just a fantastic place to be, I think, in the summer.
Are you secretly working for their marketing team?
I'm gonna be on Twitter tomorrow going, this summer, enjoy the splashiest of all the splashiest rides here at Flamingoland. No, but seriously, on a hot summer's day, if it's hot and you want it, and it's summer, or even it's hot and it's not summer, I suppose. But if it's sunny and you know you want to go to a park, Flamingoland. You know, do it,
you know, and I'll agree with you there. You know, I have to say, I mean, okay, well, you know, we spoke about the theming and the thoughts on that earlier. For such a independent park, it has some seriously good coasters.
Yeah,
you know, when you look at what it has to offer. I mean, I haven't been on any. I mean, Velocity was my first ever booster bike, right? And I didn't know what to expect, and that thing was probably one of the most enjoyable and smoothest and craziest rides I've ever been on in my life.
I agree.
And it was so much fun. You know, sure, it wasn't the most intense or the most crazy or in terms of the launch or the forces. It was just a really good, fun coaster. And I think, if anything, that's what they're really good at in terms of their offerings at the park, is that they just have some solid, good, fun family rides and coasters that provide for that audience so well. And I think the new 10 Looper, you know, lap bars or harnesses or whatever, it would just be a further stronger investment for the park, and it'll be great. I do agree. I think the whole Colossus restraints are quite uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. They do give you a headache, especially when your head like pings back and forth sometimes when you're going over some of the elements at Thorpe Definitely. Park. But I think if they're going to rectify that by putting in those lap bars, then wicked. And actually, hats off to Flamingoland, because this is probably quite a massive investment for them.
Yes.
They've gone out, they've done it. And yeah, it's not going to be the most outstandingly themed, most beautiful thing, but is it going to be a solid investment? Will it draw in the local crowds? Absolutely.
Definitely. I 100% agree with that. And I'm seeing all you guys are going to try and get there this year to ride it as well.
I shall try my best. I actually saw someone, I got sent it, I think it was in a screenshot, that if the ride is called Inversion, they expect the I and the O in the logo to be the number 10.
Oh.
And now I can't unsee it. And I just thought they now have to call it Inversion with 10 in the logo. Sure, it's essentially calling 13 and not putting the 1-3 in it. It would be
true.
And
you get in trouble for that. Yeah, you have to write it on even half. If you're writing by John, you have to write 13 with a 1 and a 3.
Oh. Well, the thing is,
it's true. I've heard it before.
No,
that's very, honestly, very strange.
It was Halloween staff. They were working, like, remember when it was 13 after dark?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, you had to, when you actually wrote down, oh, I can't remember exactly what it was, some sort of staff table or something, you had to write 13 with a 1 and a 3.
Was that the same, was that when they did 13 live? Because I remember, I think it was the year, the Scarefest after the year that it opened. Because mm-hmm. I remember going to the Scarefest the year before and they were still building it. And then in the queue line, they had, you know, the creepy girl in the queue line. I can't remember what they called it, something like that. But
yeah, I think one year it was either 13 after dark and then another one was 13 live. All it really was some people dressed up as bushes in queue line, really.
Well, there was like a bit of a thing about doing something live. Because they did Saw live.
And was it not Hex?
Duel live.
Because does anyone, I don't know if you ever saw this, Mikey, it happened on a very rare occasion that the staff of Hex would dress up and put on a kind of live scare attraction version of Hex.
Oh.
Completely off their own back. It was not an official thing. It wasn't advertised. It wasn't anything. It was just a few like weekends in Scarefest in 2012, say. They just decided to put the staff in as scare actors. They did it on their own backs.
Shake it up a bit.
The team of Hex. Yeah, and it's very rare anyone actually saw it, but that actually happened. So they had Hex live unofficially, and Duel live as well, which was obviously official.
Yeah, it was really good. I don't know why they stopped doing it, because it was great. I really loved it. And I think they slowed down the cars, because the cars, it's like they've turned them up to 50 mile an hour now. You kind of bash around the haunted house. I'm sure I remember when I was a kid, it felt like it went on forever. And now it's like...
done.
Then shoot that guy. And you're all over the place. But yeah, no, it was really good. I enjoyed it. I've always thought that Pleasure Beach should do a ghost train live. So I hope that one day they might do that. And I mean, it is a bit tight on the ghost train, but maybe in the Iron Maiden room, you know, in the kind of basement bit.
Oh,
maybe
yeah.
They could put some people in the Iron Maiden room.
They could do. There was anyone do Karnowski's Ghost Train, which was a live action horror haunted house, but with a train rather than walking through.
Yeah, I was opening day in Blackpool. Well, when they opened the big one near the Pleasure Beach, because okay. They were in a garden before, and they had Paloma Faith open it, because Paloma Faith, when they used to tour Karnowski's Ghost Train, and I think they went to Glastonbury, Paloma Faith used to be one of the actors.
Oh.
So Paloma Faith did them a favour and did the grand opening and blah, blah, blah. And so we were on... Paloma Faith and the celebrities went on their train, and then we went on the train after them. But it was so bizarre, because it was just literally all it was is a circle track, or like an oval, and it just go round and round and round, and then it just kind of stop, and then you'd kind of have this kind of scene in front of you, this kind of theatrical spooky scene, and then it's got all around it. I always imagined the train being like this kind of diesel train or something, but I think it was just electric or something. But it was just completely mad. It was one of the maddest things I've ever been on. It was great.
I'm so sad that I missed that, because I remember researching that and looking at that and thinking, I mean, I was quite young when it was happening, so I wish I could have got to it. So it's definitely one of those ones that got away, I feel, because I would have loved to experience it. It sounds everything. It's theatrical, drama, it's a ride, it's spooky. I mean, it's just got everything going for it.
Definitely.
I think the train was known to derail every now and then, I've heard.
Really? See, I only ever did it once. I was.
I've seen photos of it derailed before, wow. Yeah.
It's a shame it's not there, though. It was a proper gem.
The thing is, though, it was too expensive for where it was, though. For Blackpool, next to the Pleasure Beach, and then you're opposite Sandcastle and South Pier and that. It was something like, I think originally when it first opened, it was almost like £8 a ride or something, which... You know, if you've got a few kids and stuff and you're looking at it and going, oh, do we want to go on Karnowski's Ghost Train? Then you think, no, because it's going to cost me £40.
True.
You know, so, and I think in the last year or so, it were looking a bit worse for wear, and I think they'd reduced the actors down, and I think they'd reduced it down to like a fiver or something like that. But they still weren't getting the people in. And I just don't think that was its market. Mm-hmm. Its market was... For example, going to Glastonbury or somewhere and then moving on. You know, it was that kind of attraction. And for example, if they put like Karnowski, so say like Scare Kingdom or something, say that they put it there as like an add-on attraction that you paid a bit, you know, you paid extra for, I bet it'd be busy all night. You know?
Yeah, that's a good
point. I think Atmosphere did provide actors for Karnowski's Ghost
I think they did in its latter years, yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's a shame.
Well, cool. Have you guys heard of there was a kind of a similar thing, well, more of a permanent venue, but and this is really jumping afield in terms of location, but in Australia they've got a really famous cabaret bar called Dracula's. I mean, it's on the Gold Coast, and that, to get into there, it's like a horror themed, you know, vampire themed cabaret show. Think like Circus of Horrors, but more vampire.
Nice.
And more sexual.
Winner.
More
sexual.
Sexual.
A bit more sexual.
How can you? Okay, yeah, fine.
But anyway, to get to the bar and to get to the restaurant and the place again, you actually have to go on a ghost train, like a proper themed permanent ghost train. I've never done it myself, but a friend of mine used to work at the bar, and he was saying, you know, guests would be find it just so bonkers that they turn up, you know, they'd be, you know, do you have a reservation, mate? Yeah, I do. All right, just go book yourself in here. All right, just write your name down there. All right, now just hop aboard the ghost train, don't worry about it, we'll get you there in a jiffy. And then all these people, and they're like, oh my gosh, what's happening here? You know, bars down and straight on a blooming ride to get to the restaurant. I mean, why can't we have some of that in London or anywhere? Yeah, cool. Manchester. Shove us on a roller coaster before dinner.
I can't imagine a Cockney like hey up, governor, get yourself on board that ghost train there.
Wow, we got a second impression one episode.
See, you're getting your money's worth, aren't you?
Wow. right, well, it seems like we've sort of naturally progressed on to scare stuff anyway, which is cool. But before we sort of finish off on a few scare things, let's quickly just, I want to get your guys' thoughts on the likes of Black Mirror, Gangster Granny, two new rides at the Merlin Parks, Thorpe Park and Orton Towers. You excited about those? I know they're not huge investments, and obviously, you know, David Walliams Land is technically a kids area and a kids ride, but I quite like a kids dark ride now and again, or a family dark ride. I think it's what Orton Towers are really, really missing.
Well, I think if they'd have done Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, maybe with a bit of a darker theme, I think that could have been one of the best rides in the country. But they went for this very, very cartoony kind of version of, you know, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which it was all right for kids, but for adults wasn't particularly engaging, apart from the great glass elevator scene at the end, which I thought was actually pretty good. That was I just went on it just to go in the glass elevator at the end because it was really good. But Gangster Granny, I'm not going to be rushing to ride it, but I think it looks pretty interesting. I'm not a massive fan of David Walliams, really, so it's hard to get excited for that. In terms of Black Mirror, I mean, I love Black Mirror. But Thorpe Park do not have the best track record when it comes to these kind of attractions.
Agreed. So it's very much like, I was never really a fan of I'm a Celeb, and then we made it Jungle Escape. It just seemed like, again, this seems to be one of those things. Don't get me wrong, we might be blown away by it, but I don't think it's what Thorpe Park need right now. Personally, but it could be cool.
Yeah, I think Thorpe Park, I don't know whether it's the park's own decisions that leads to all of these actor-led related attractions, but I'm sure they would have learnt their lesson by now. You have Saw Alive and all the other different attractions that they keep opening up with actors. They even have actors in I've Not Done It Yet, Darren Brown's Ghost Train, I believe, and they've already reduced those to nothing. They have a real obsession with employing actors for their attractions, and the only issue with that is that you're having to pay that actor every day to be there.
And of course,
it will definitely, if the queue lines drop, so will the actors' roles, and will likely be left with a pretty cool mirror maze. Is it being held in the kind of Hellgate area behind X?
Yeah, I think so. So Hellgate, Cabin in the Woods, The Passing, most recently The Walking Dead, Living Nightmare. I believe that's where the location is.
So do we think that might be a potential new kind of ramped up experience over Fright Nights?
Potentially. It all depends on the kind of license they have with them, I guess, doesn't it? Like, if they've said yes, you can make an attraction, but it's a bit like Harry Potter at Universal. Like J.K. Rowling got really angry because a Halloween Horror Nights light was shining on King's Cross. You know, she like kicked her, you know, threw her toys out the pram.
You're not allowed to get chocolate sprinkles in the ice cream, the butterbeer ice cream. Like, that's how mad it is over there. It's got to be butterbeer ice cream. Because they have the, I can't remember the name of the place now, but you know the ice cream place that's down Diagon Alley?
Yes.
And I just momentarily lapsed, and I said, oh, I want the butterbeer beer. I said, oh, could I have some chocolate sprinkles? I'm like, no. I was like, oh, okay. And then Shelley went, oh, you're not allowed to have chocolate sprinkles with butterbeer, silly. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. So that's how That's how mad it is. Also, what's really weird as well is that she must really like Golden Wonder crisps because they are everywhere.
They're everywhere. And they're so expensive as well.
Yeah, but do you know what? If you go into King's Cross, when you go in through the queue line, there's like a little shop there and they have some Golden Wonder that you can like sample. And there were some Americans there like holding them like it was some sort of fine like piece of food and they're going, Golden Wonder. And I'm like, that was when I was a kid, that was like the cheapest like crisps you could get.
Yeah, you can get 12 for a pound.
School lunch boxes, you know what I mean? That's a classic. But I got to say, you know, Black Mirror looks pretty cool. I hope that, I mean, we've already touched on it, all of us have, but I really, really hope that it's not going to be a similar situation to perhaps what we've seen before, where slowly the offering's been reduced. But it is quite an expandable space. It's a huge space that they're building that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, fairly big. Definitely. So I think they've got room there to do something quite impressive. I just hope that it is gonna hold up. In terms of David Walliams and the new Dark Ride, I absolutely love Dark Rides. Oh my gosh, I love them so much. I don't know what it is about them. I think I'm just a big fan of theming and art direction in general, so that all kinds of plays into it. But I think judging by the standard of what Alton Towers gives and provides, especially in its dark rides. I mean, come on, Hex has got to be one of the UK's best dark ride, if not one of the best in Europe. Yeah. I mean, it's so incredible. Definitely. So, you know, the standard in general park-wide is always, lack of a better word, outstanding. So I hope and I know in my heart that David Walliams is going to be awesome, and they wouldn't have spent a lot of time, all this money, all this energy on building something and changing a whole area pretty much based around one featured attraction if it wasn't worth it. You know what I mean? So I feel like it will be a really good investment for the park. Black Mirror, again, it does feel like a mid-range investment. Obviously, it's no major coaster, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. I mean, we all know that, you know, it could end up perhaps being, you know, awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
Where do you stand on Mystery Dungeons or some?
On what, sorry?
Oh my gosh!
Mystery Dungeons.
Yeah, Sam enjoys.
Even I don't know what they're talking about, and I was there, Mike.
I enjoy. I get another quote. This is what I mean. I get misquoted out of context. I love a mystery dungeon, but not not in that way.
I was going to say after a anyway, good date, fantastic. Or
it's going to be. I mean, yeah, sure. Sometimes a date, sometimes just a message. Sometimes, you know, who knows? No, I'm kidding. It's great. It's all good.
You need to explain Mystery Dungeon, though.
Wow, we don't have any context after all that.
Well, yeah, I don't really know how to give any context. You know, use your imagination. We all love a dungeon, don't we?
The context is that Sam said, I've never been on a dark thrill ride before. And then after all that, he went, oh, actually, I've been on Mystery Castle. And then he just started telling us that anything with mystery in Mystery Castles, Mystery Dungeons, sign me up, I think was the quote.
That was, you got very good memory, Brian. That actually was, yeah, that's right. I was talking about Mystery Castle at Fantasyland being incredible, and a lot of people give me hate for that because they say it's not very thrilling, it's not very impactful, but at the time, it seriously took my breath.
Oh, I bloody love it. I thought it was great.
Oh, it's incredible, right?
Yeah.
Had you previously, before going on it, had you looked at anything of what was going to happen inside? Did you know what the ride was?
Didn't have a clue. I knew it was some sort of drop tower. That's all I knew.
See, I didn't even know that. I sat down on the seat, right? The theming was amazing inside, you know, as to be expected in Fantasyland. Sat down, looked at the floor, and because of where the lap bars were, I was thinking, oh, this is going to be like similar to the London Dungeons. Like, it's going to go back, the floor's going to disappear, and then we're going to drop downwards. So I was looking down, like, when's the floor going to drop? When's the floor going to drop? And of course, this thing's just shot up. And I could not breathe. Honestly, Mikey, it was so dramatic. I couldn't breathe. Everyone was screaming around me. The strobe lights were going at the top, you know, and I came off that and I thought, oh my gosh, that is the most intense ride experience probably I've ever, ever had, and I, you know, and I do love a big mystery, because that's what I love about dark rides. You never know what you're going to get
what's next,
until you're strapped in.
Definitely, that's I was just about to say as well. And it's technically a dark ride, in a way.
It is.
Indoor dark ride is technically a dark ride to an extent.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, it's a dark ride. It's awesome. You know, you get strapped in for a super fun ride, and you just never know what's around the corner. So, you know, I love a mystery castle, and I love a mystery dungeon, apparently. So,
right, let's move away from dungeons and move on to scare attractions. Obviously,
like it could go the same way.
Kind of similar, yeah, kind of similar. I think I've been in a few scare attractions called the dungeon, in fact. So, yeah, but before we go, obviously, this is a Coast Track episode, so I wanted to mainly talk about the theme park side of things, and anyone listening who loves theme parks, head over to Theme Park Loopy as well to check out their podcast. But scare stuff. So was anyone able to get to many events last year? Obviously, it was a year of crappy COVID, but did anyone get out to many scares for the 2020 season?
Absolute zero. I live in Wales.
And that you were just locked down for the month.
The first Minister of Wales actually said the words, Halloween is illegal. I'm not even kidding.
Wow.
I was watching the news and I thought, oh, this is not going to go well, but fine, okay. Yeah, I had Simon, the owner of Terra Mountain, waiting in a text. And they actually said the words, yeah, Halloween this year will be illegal.
That's insane.
And I just texted him saying, so Halloween's illegal? And we just instantly had to cancel Terra Mountain. I mean, we had loads of contingency plans and even a new attraction planned that we never even got to announce because we were just too unsure. But it also meant I thought, oh, I've actually got a year off for the first year in maybe 7 or 8 years. But I couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah, you couldn't do anything.
No, I spent Halloween at home. I decorated the house. I put sweets out on like a washing line for trick-or-treaters that never came.
Because it was illegal. And that was
Halloween was illegal. So I just sat here and drank and had my own little Halloween party to myself, really.
Bless you. Well,
I know.
Well, I got to 8 or 9 places. Sorry, not to rub it in. Sam, Ryan, did you get... I know, Sam, you were saying you were working on a freak show. Did you get to visit any other places? Or Ryan, did you get to visit any screen parks?
So I was in the process of moving house last year. So right. I was going to have a bit of a late start to October, but I did manage to get out to Scarefest. So that was my main thing that I did last year. The year before, I got to a couple of places and went to... just a shout out to a local event near here, which is called Ilkley Scare Trail. And I think it was the first year that they'd put it on, actually, as well. So that was, I think it's Stuart Kite, I think, is the guy.
Oh, I know Stuart. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know Stuart. I didn't realise. Yeah. Oh, nice.
He does a few North Allerton ways. There's one North Allerton way. There's an Otley zombie event that they do as well. And that was really interesting because it was, you kind of went into like a woodland and you kind of got batched up and you had to kind of go through this kind of woodland trail. And it was very damp and very rainy. So you can't control the weather, can you? But it was October. And you kind of came across all these different scenes, and there were some really, really good scenes. There was one where there was like a fire and a guy like tied up, and then you kind of went through this kind of military zombie zone and things like that. And that were really good, was that? It was a really good local attraction. So I think, obviously, they had to cancel this year, but if you're in the Yorkshire area, I would get yourself to Ilkley Scare Trail, but you do need to book ahead and just be aware that you do have to queue a little bit. It's just because I think the logistics of getting those groups together and going around the woodland is a little tricky. So you just need to be a little bit patient. But I was very impressed because it was obviously done without a massive budget.
Mm.
It was done really well. But in terms of Scarefest, I thought it was one of the best years, actually. And I think that was down to the fact that you didn't get batched into groups. Went in with just yourself or with your partner or whoever. And that was it. And I think that kind of added a lot to it. So in the future, I'd love them to think about maybe just carrying on doing that, because I hate being in this kind of conga line, because you always get the person at the front either goes too fast or they go too slow, and then the person at the back's either going too fast or too slow.
Definitely.
And then the actors start kicking off at you for going too quickly, and then before you know it, you're a conga line of 10, now you're a conga line of 20, and then you're a conga line of 30, and before you know it, you're just kind of meandering through this attraction, and you're just not getting the right scares. But going through, you know, for example, the toxic junkyard and getting
the amazing toxic junkyard.
Yeah, and getting a little bit of, you know, extra attention, you know, and going through the Altonville mine tour and seeing Grandpappy and a couple of other people in there. I just thought it was really good. So I was really impressed. The problem is with Alton Towers at the moment is it's all well and good having reduced crowds, but the reality is that you're going to be studying queues all day. So even if the park is in theory at 60%, you're still stood with a full queue of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I do question whether the whole reduced capacity thing actually works. But I think going forward, I would love them to think about, actually, let's just batch in individual groups now. Did you go to Scarefest this year?
Yes, yeah, I went this year.
So my only comment would be when it came to the attic that I didn't like the fact, and these guys think I'm moaning about this because I keep going on about this, but I didn't like the fact that people were exiting the attraction at the same point you were getting ready to go into the attraction. So before you went into that main area where they had the big table and all that kind of stuff, you were kind of waiting, and then people were coming past. And the problem is it wasn't like they were at the very end of the attraction, so they're all like screaming, coming out, going, oh, that was great. They'd already walked about 2 minutes, you know, through the building. So they're already like, oh.
Yeah, so yeah, I can get that.
It ruined the anticipation for me. Yeah. So that's my only gripe about Scarefest.
That's a fair enough gripe. I have a similar one for when they used to have Cabin in the Woods, and then it was Living Nightmare. Before that, it was The Passing and whatnot. Down at Thorpe, that maze, always you have to sort of cross over where the entrance and exit is. So you see people sort of leaving as you're entering it. And like you say, it was a little bit different with the attic because they had time to calm down a little bit, and it, you know, if they had been scared, you couldn't really tell. So it sort of ruined the atmosphere and the build up. But I found that with the one in Thorpe as well. With when you know you're ready to go into Cabin in the Woods or Living Dead, the Living Dead maze, but people are just sauntering out the exit as you're about to come in. It sort of gives off the whole bad vibe, doesn't it? You know, I mean, remember years ago, no one walked out of Asylum. They were running. Every person was running out of the Asylum. Everyone would run out of Seven. Everyone would run out of all these mazes. And I just feel that, I know, obviously, we might have got used to them over time and whatnot, and it's all a little bit of a... We can get into the psychology of scares over the years, but we do not have time for that. But we can do that another time. But, you're right. The fact that the attic sort of let people just meander out where you were waiting to go in kind of just doesn't get you pumped up, does it?
Yeah, and I remember... sorry, just cut in super quick. I remember Asylum. Didn't they even... this was years ago now, but I'm sure they used to have security that would keep like the exit area clear because people were charging out of those double doors.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was such a violent desperation to get out. They would have to like literally clear that area so that nobody got trampled.
Yeah, definitely. People are running out low. Hannah's fell over many a time coming out of those doors. But yeah, they'd have to keep the whole area clear because people were literally running. And like I say, that was a long time ago as well. We look at things with nostalgia and whatnot, and scare mazes weren't as prominent back then. You know, the amount of chainsaw finales we have now is countless. But yeah, it's always better when you can see people running for the exit rather than just meandering out.
Well, Sam, do you remember that you had your first visit to a certain scare attraction in July, didn't you?
In July?
Yeah. Where did I take you in July to a certain little scare attraction in a little?
Oh my goodness! Yes, yeah, in Scarborough. Oh, what was that?
Oh, Terror Tower.
That was it, Terror Tower.
How was it? I've never been.
Oh my goodness! Yeah.
I've not.
That was great. So charming. It was wonderful. It was on this. It was gorgeous. It was on this little like seaside town. I mean, I'm going to be honest. I'd never been to Scarborough before, so I didn't really know what to expect. But I knew that only from researching that there was this little like indie scare attraction, you know, Terror Tower. And we went, and it was, I don't know how much it was, sort of a fiver to get in or whatever. And it was really nice, impressive scenes and loads of like little animatronic scares. You know, I don't think there were any actors, but it was almost just like a traditional classic haunted house, like what you think of when you think of an old school haunted house with loads of like, you know, falling props and censored and timed kind of gags and things that were sort of almost pretend to fall on you and vibrating doors and things. So it was a bit sort of cheesy in that respect, but it was just great, honest, good fun. And that was great. I remember we had a rave in one of the final sections. I think it was the blade section. I didn't expect that. It's great.
Yeah, the blade section was great. That's new, is that actually? That wasn't there. I actually went to Terror Tower on the second day they opened. So when it very first opened. So when it first opened, it used to have like a lift scene. So when you used to go through the entrance, you went into a lift, and then you would all huddle around the side of the lift, and it would kind of rumble, and some doors would actually open up underneath. But I think it very quickly that kind of disappeared, because I think it probably wasn't actually, you know, 100% safe because they didn't exactly have a barrier around it. It was just basically the staff said, right, you need to go to the edge of the lift and make sure you hold on to these bars. And then it kind of opened up. But unfortunately, the lift is completely gone now. That's a shame. But yeah, it's a great attraction, but I really miss... and they do have an actor normally, but because of COVID, they didn't have the actor. Right. So, you know, they do normally have an actor. But they used to also have a little ghost train that kind of moved around Scarborough, and it was in a few different arcades, and I don't think it's there anymore, but they used to always have the traditional, just a guy who used to, he must have got paid, this guy just to sit in this ghost train and turn on a torch. He was just sat in a chair. They just go, and then turn off the torch, and it's like, you can't get any more
old school lo-fi scares.
They were all good fun.
Sometimes those ones are the little gems of scare attractions, aren't they? You know, I'm a huge fan of Passage del Terra, and people give, you know, people are, it seems to either love it or hate it, sort of thing. People give it crap, but you know, I love the thing. I think it's great. It's, I wouldn't say it's my favorite in the world, but if anyone was coming from another country who had never experienced scare maze or haunted house, I'd probably go, you know what, Passage del Terra has it all. You know, that's your sort of standard, sort of, not bog standard, that's the wrong sort of adjective, but, you know, just your standard quality scare maze, I'd say Passage is it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, Passage del Terra has come on leaps and bounds over the last, say, three or four years. Their sets have been incredible. The last time I went through it, I didn't even recognize some of it. It was absolutely amazing in comparison to what I remember from years and years ago. But it is, like you said, the perfect, what we know was a really good scare attraction, a really solid scare attraction, but also has still that nostalgic haunted house feel to it.
Yeah.
So it's the perfect blend of those two things. And it is, if I was to explain to someone, like you said, someone came to this country and went, what's a scare attraction? I'd be like, you know what? We'll go to Blackpool. It is the perfect, almost the perfect embodiment of what a scare attraction is, in definitely. A way.
So I'm intrigued because I did the London version quite a few years ago when that came to the Trocadero Center, and that was really good. So I'd be interested to, well, I must have been 13 or 14 when that was kicking off. So I'd be interested. I haven't actually done the Blackpool version, just because it was actually truthfully, as awful as this may be and almost blasphemous, it was my first time ever at Blackpool this summer. So I know it's just blasphemous, but you know, so, and we unfortunately never got to do Passage of Terror because at the time it was closed, you know, because of the global pandemic. But I would really be interested to see how it compares and if the London version was just a carbon copy, or if the Blackpool one is more original and offer different scenes and such. But I will say one thing that I think that's really cool and interesting that came out of, you know, almost a silver lining, if we can call it that, of Halloween happening amongst the mm-hmm. pandemic, if it's not too crude to say, is that I think what it offered for punters and guests going through the various scare mazes around the country in terms of staggering crowds is it offered a new sense of vulnerability. Because they were smaller groups, right? So maybe you're going through as a two or a three and you're just on your own. You can't rely on necessarily the other group behind you or the other kind of bigger group, or that even if you're a small group, you'll be put in a larger group and therefore you'll be safe because you can go in the middle. You know, I think it really offered this sense of vulnerability that had been perhaps lacking in previous years, where you could shove 10 people through at one time. And I think that really worked. It worked to the advantage of not only the guests going through to have a more scary experience, but also the actors to be able to really work their area and their space and get more kind of scares in and really manipulate their guests going through. I mean, I don't know if you guys felt that, not necessarily Scarefest related, but in general, going through your attractions, that you did you notice that there was a sense of vulnerability?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I like the smaller the group the better with scare attractions, definitely. I mean, me and Brett have discussed it before, and obviously we always talk about it at scare cons and whatnot, but the consistency of scare attractions, the two words, they just don't go together. You can't make scare attractions haunted houses as consistent as you would have a dark ride or a coaster. It's just the variables are too many, and one variable of that is the size of the group, where you are in that group. Are you at the front, are you back? Even if you are more scared than others, if you're a guy or a girl, if you're gender fluid, you know, that there's just so many different variables of what scare actors might do to individuals, or how you might miss a scare because they're all very front heavy in certain houses. So the vulnerability aspect 100% for me rose purely because every maze I went in was just either me or Hannah, or me and Hannah, or me and maybe a few people in that bubble. So obviously you were working at a scare fest, did you see that as well with the guests?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I noticed, yeah, as you say, I was working the event, and I mean, it really, it does vary from group to group in terms of the reactions and the scares. You know, some people, we talked about this a little bit previously on some other podcasts, but it's so interesting that you would get almost different kind of stereotypes of groups that would go through, right? You get the person that would want to try and guess where every scare was coming from, uh-huh. and who was determined not to be scared. You'd get the group that was very kind of aggressive and that was their defense mechanism. You'd get those groups that just wouldn't want to take any steps further because they were so scared. So it really changed from group to group, to be honest. But as I say, the main thing that I noticed was that you could really work the groups a lot more than perhaps if they were there in purely by numbers. And I felt that the reactions that we were getting, perhaps more often than not, was that people were really, really jumping out of their skin, and they were more scared because, as I say, they didn't have anyone to protect themselves. They couldn't like hide behind all of their clusters and mates, you know what I mean?
Of course.
And I think that was fantastic. And I think it, you know, by splitting up groups and forcing people to go through it, and it's so funny because you can take the biggest, burliest, you know, group of like three or four lads, right? And they can be massive around their mates, you know, puffing out their chest, walking around, you know, whatever, I'm not scared. But then you cut that group in half into groups of two, and they're grabbing each other, not wanting to take a next step forward because, you know, their bubble's gone. So I loved it. I thought it was so interesting. It was, I mean, it was a fantastic event again to work, and it was wonderful. And hats off to everyone involved, and amazing that you guys could all, and those people out there could come off and enjoy it. You know, obviously, I'm not speaking on behalf of the resort, Alton Towers, Merlin, or any affiliated companies. This is all just my own personal views. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was wicked, and it really works this year.
Yeah, definitely. I think this was the best year for Scarefest, purely because they sort of extended Oktoberfest into Scarefest, with the whole sort of area out on the lawn, having all the stands there. So what I think Scarefest has lacked in atmosphere, because it's such a big park as well, it's hard to find the atmosphere, especially since they got rid of scare zones. So as always, the last few years, it always lacked that Scarefest feel, whereas this year they had the little bar set up, they had hot dog stand, breakfast, you know, they had the whole Oktoberfest sort of transferred into, and that was a last minute decision as well. They didn't have long to turn that round. They weren't going to do it. So the fact that they made that last minute decision to make sort of a cross between Oktoberfest and Scarefest, I think that worked really well for the park.
Go on.
And I was just going to say, they had the Skelvin Spooky Tales.
Yes,
and,
yeah.
Because me and Sam had we had a coffee and chilled it. We're watching Skelvin Spooky Tales.
I loved it. I thought, actually, and that was something that I noticed just walking around the resort, you know, getting to work and such or whatever, that walking around, there was, because of that event, as you said, you know, there was a really amazing, like, autumnal, smoky, like, cold, but, you know, kind of funky, all the descriptions, or, you know, autumn afternoon and autumn air to it. And it almost felt like it was our mini version of Halloween Horror Nights, you know, because it had that excitement and festive feeling in the air of, you know, this is Halloween, and and, you know, the leaves were changing, and you could smell the smoke of the pit fire of the Bratwurst, and, you know, the flags and bunting were up, and there was, you know, families with all their kind of trick-or-treating outfits on, and everyone was wrapped up in their winter Halloween spooky, you know, clothes and jackets. And it was such a atmosphere. And I would argue that was more so this year than perhaps other years, visiting, you know, as a guest and whatnot, because of the Oktoberfest. Yeah. Event.
Definitely.
I definitely think that loads of scare attractions and screen parks are going to learn from the last year and potentially this year as well, because restriction leads to innovation. You know, we've seen these new ways of doing throughput on large scare attractions that have clearly made everyone's experience better. If they can in the future work on, you know, maybe increasing that throughput, but keeping the smaller groups by the way they design their attractions, then they've learned something new throughout this pandemic that is actually just going to make scare attractions better. We've seen the drive-through stuff. We've seen all these different new innovations that have come out of what is technically a really horrible situation. But, you know, we strive to entertain, and we'll do that however seems fit, really.
Definitely. That sort of transferred into, obviously, not just with haunts and scare mazes as well, but even escape rooms. Like, they've, the innovation to make it so we can do them online and sort of control someone at the escape room's been awesome. I've been able to do ones in Seattle over in America, like the Evil Dead 2 room, which I'd never normally get a chance to do, but because of COVID, I've actually been able to do it. So, yeah, pretty grim, obviously, horrible COVID, but we'll definitely learn, like Brett says, some new cool things to do because of it, definitely.
Yeah, I think so. I did one of those online escape rooms as well. I think I did one in Ireland, and then we were on Google Earth trying to find, like, all the different shops and things like that you had to kind of find in order to sort of get the clues, and
cool.
Yeah, it's well worth doing. If you can, because, I mean, obviously we need to make sure we're supporting all these businesses that can't be open at the moment. So I'd recommend, you know, if there's escape rooms in your area, have a look if you know, they're offering an online version or something like that. And, you know, because sometimes I think they only charge usually a couple of quid or fiver, or, you know, if it's a good one, or, you know, it just depends. So, you know, support those attractions so they can get back open. Definitely. Again, because, you know, the concern is that, you know, a lot of businesses might not be able to reopen and
fall. Oh, 100%, yeah.
You know, support them.
Definitely,
while you can.
Yeah. And if they're not doing online stuff, you can buy vouchers or gift vouchers, tickets for future, hoodies, you know, the parks are selling merch. Yeah. Get some hoodies. I need to do that myself, to be fair. I think that's the perfect sort of way to wrap it up, really. It sort of goes through the year of last year and then talking about scares. And obviously, we've spoken about some new stuff for this year. We've been rambling on for over an hour now. So I think that's the perfect way to end this episode. And guys, I'm coming on your episode soon as well. So anything that we missed out today, we can chat on yours.
Yeah, we're looking forward to having you in a few weeks' time. You'll be coming into the Lion's Den.
Yeah, I'm nervous now. I'm nervous. I can't make any stupid jokes that you'll just rib me for the next 6 months. no, I appreciate that, guys. I do appreciate it. So there we go. A huge thank you to Ryan, Sam, and Brett. Brett, the world class model. guys, obviously listening to this podcast now, head over, check out Theme Park Loopy, check out all the tags in the show notes below. Support everyone in this awesome theme park community. And Ryan, Sam, and Brett, thank you so much for joining me on Coaster Track and Scare Track.
Thank you.
It's been
brilliant. It's been one of the things I'm thinking that I can't wait to go on to Scare Track. I thought, because ever since I started making content, Scare Track has been one of those that I've always looked up to and thought, oh, wow, this is someone who makes really good quality content. So to be invited onto your podcast, I'm actually honoured to be able to come on to it. So thank you very much.
Oh, no, that's very kind. That means a lot. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Oh, God, you're going to make me cry before the end of the episode.
absolutely, very true. Very, very true. Going to second Ryan there. Full-on fangirl here. Quite secretly, fangirl. so, yeah, thank you for having us. It's been amazing.
No, it's great. Thank you. No, I really appreciate that kind words from both of you. And Brett, I know that we're secretly in love with each other anyway, aren't we? So.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just have to snog you next time I get a ScareCon. You know, it's fine. It's all behind closed doors with us. I don't really have to say anything.
What happens at ScareCon stays at ScareCon, definitely.
Always.
I mean, am I the only one that's hoping there's going to be a camera there for that moment? I don't know.
Right, well, I'm going to end it there. right.
If Mikey turns up in a wheelchair again, I'm 100% sure there'll be a camera around.
You're listening to the Coaster Track Podcast.
So I feel like I need to put that into context. Last ScareCon, I was in a wheelchair because I recently had my appendix out, and it seemed to mean that every male in the room wanted to give me a lap dance. No females, by the way, just the males. But hey-ho. But I'll have a lap dance off anyone. So moving on to end this episode of Coaster Track. First of all, a huge thank you to Ryan, Sam, and Brett for coming on. Looking forward to check out their episode when I'm on their podcast in a few weeks' time. Make sure you head over to their channel, give them a like, subscribe, anything you can to support them. Whilst you're there, make sure you're following us. Coaster Track runs under the same handle as our main Scare Track podcast. So just search for Scare Track on Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, and Facebook. Of course, you can check out all our video content on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/ScareTrack, or you can get absolutely everything Coaster Track and Scare Track related over on our website, scaretrack.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of this episode. A huge thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.